Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady with Jake Gutierrez. I know Buster mentioned how angry he was that Patrick Mahomes was ranked number 4 in the NFL top 100, which, I mean, look, I understand that people get mad when Mahomes or the Chiefs are disrespected, at least in their eyes, around Kansas City. But, man, just let it go. For years and years and years, we'd have to fight these battles and have these arguments because that's all the Chiefs had. You couldn't point to scoreboard. You couldn't point to the Super Bowl. You couldn't do that. All those years, you couldn't do that. So it meant more. These other things, you know, the number of Pro Bowlers, any sign of respect that the Chiefs would get from the outside, from around the league, from around the country, people, I think, were more dependent on that and put more weight in that because that's all we had for such a long time. And honestly, it just, none of that matters. Because what we have to understand now in Kansas City is everyone really outside of Chiefs kingdom, outside of the fan base, is pissed off that the Chiefs won. They're angry because they see how the Chiefs are set up for success moving forward. They're mad that Mahomes signed the deal, the long-term deal. They're mad that the Chiefs didn't pay him enough in their minds. They're mad that the Chiefs found a way to keep Chris Jones, too. They should be mad, just like we used to get mad at the Broncos when they would continually do things in the offseason and they would somehow be able to bring in Peyton Manning and add all this talent around him. How many times did the Patriots do something that pissed you off and we'd say, how does the rest of the league let the Patriots get away with this? Why would you trade with the Patriots? Why did you let the Patriots? And that's what other teams and other fan bases say about the Chiefs now. How in the hell did they sign Chris Jones to? All that stuff. And it's hilarious because the Chiefs are the Super Bowl champions and they're not done. Not even close to being done. And it's just, you know, even if he would have been number 2 or so, you can have fun arguments there, but it's like so stupid that he's number 4. It's not even worth the time that I've already wasted talking about it. And they have him as the 3rd best quarterback. It's stupid. It's so ridiculous. It's not even worth having a debate with people on Twitter or anything. It's ridiculous.
It's actually brilliant. It's actually 100% brilliant.
Nobody'd be talking about it if Mahomes was number 1.
Exactly.
They'd just be like, whatever.
Yeah,
top 100 list.
Everybody would be like, "Yep, he is the best." Because everybody in the world, everybody in the universe knows Patrick Mahomes is the best football player on this planet Earth.
Maybe ever.
Maybe ever. Right now, though, he is number 1, and everybody knows it. And so if they don't put him number 1, then people talk about
it. But the players voted on it, right? Like, it wasn't like the NFL, unless that you think, are you suggesting that they maybe manipulated data?
Yeah, I don't think that. I think this is completely NFL Network. They say,
I saw a ballot that didn't have Mahomes in the top 10.
I love it. I love it.
It's there are bitter people out there.
They're called haters.
Are so pissed off that the Chiefs are having the success. Can you imagine turning in a ballot that didn't have Mahomes in the top 10?
No.
Well, I just...
Well, it was out there.
That takes any validity to this.
Right. Well, when it is, or if he's number 4,
right.
That's it. And I really don't want to talk about it anymore.
Well,
I'm just trying to remind people that the real rankings are...
The real rankings
Super Bowl
are,
MVP right. And the world champs.
Who has the trophy?
That's the real... Right.
Hey, I think it's a fun list. It's a fun thing to watch. But it hit me when I was looking at Twitter last night and I saw the Baltimore Ravens on their Twitter handle bragging about Lamar Jackson being number 1. And I thought to myself, which team would I rather be following right now? The team that's bragging about winning the Super Bowl, or the team that's bragging about some guy winning in a trumped up thing that doesn't mean anything in a team game? It's funny though. Get the alarm ready, Jake. This week, when we were having our little conference call to get ready for tonight's Sporting KC game.
No.
Yeah. We were talking about the fact that Sporting became the Vegas favorite to win this competition. Should we talk about it on our pregame show or not? And I said, hell no, we don't. In Kansas City, we're the underdogs. We don't go around being the favorites. We like being the underdogs. We have a chip on our shoulder. We're flyover country. We don't want to talk about ourselves being the favorite. And Jacob Peterson said, are the Chiefs the underdog? Are the Chiefs not the biggest juggernaut in all of American sports right now? Is that a problem for them? You just got to own it. And I was like, hang on a second. That's right. We have the biggest juggernaut in professional sports in America right now, right here in Kansas City. And nobody can really deny it. John Elway, everybody else is basically just saying that we're all chasing the Kansas City Chiefs.
That is awesome.
Yeah. That's never been the case in my life. That was always like reserved for other towns. The Royals were kind of that way in 15 to a certain extent, but I still don't think most of baseball thought that, oh, this is the best team with the biggest name players and the most talent.
It was
different
because that was not going to last a decade.
Right, right. And also, like, there were good players on that Royals team, but there wasn't anybody on that team that people were like, this is the best player in all of baseball. You know, this Chiefs team is loaded with incredible big name players, a big name coach. They are the gold standard of the NFL right now. They just are. And so, like, whatever, to number 4, number 10, whatever you want to put Patrick Mahomes, go ahead. Put him whatever you want.
And this is me. I always, in every sport, I always have put probably too much weight, too much emphasis for other people, not for me, because this is the way I look at it, and it's all opinion based. I put way more weight in what a player does in the postseason than probably most people. When it comes to Hall of Fame resume, when it comes to reputation, everything, the way I think of a player, I put so much weight into how they perform in the postseason. That's why I try to drill into people's heads, like, that never watched him play and don't appreciate him. Go back and look and see what George Brett did in the postseason.
Yeah.
And you can just look at his regular season numbers, and he's a Hall of Famer. No question. He would be a Hall of Famer if he never played in the postseason game. But my God, will you look at what he did in the postseason?
And what a lot of people have had a chance to do during this pandemic, since there wasn't live sports going on for 4 months, is go back and actually watch some of those games. You go back and watch George Brett do those things in the postseason, it takes on a different meaning too. Because one of the things about postseason, the stadiums are full. You know, the atmosphere is incredibly intense. Everything
it's like
goes
the SEC,
up a notch.
It just means more.
That's right.
It just means more.
That's right.
Just like the SEC.
That's why you voted for Lamar Jackson, because he was so good in the postseason.
And so, are we allowed to talk about the postseason performance when we talk about who the best player is? Because if we are, then go ahead and take Lamar Jackson out of the top 10.
Go ahead and
wipe him out. And this goes back to yesterday, and I didn't do this because people get defensive when I just want to talk about the postseason, but I really do wish we would have had more time when we were talking about the Travis Kelce, Tony Gonzalez comparisons. And I guess I am biased. I am a far greater Travis Kelce supporter than I ever was for Tony Gonzalez, for many, many reasons. And even afterwards, and we all know how things happen, you know, and, look, he went to Atlanta, he has every reason to love Atlanta. He probably enjoyed some Lou Will, Lemon Pepper, Barbecue Wings, and Magic City, and that made him fall in love with, and that's great. Everyone's entitled to that. But am I allowed to mention that in 7 career postseason games, Tony Gonzalez had 30 catches for 286 yards and 4 touchdowns? And in 9 career postseason games, Travis Kelce has 52 catches for 632 yards and 6 touchdowns? Am I allowed to factor that in?
Yep. 100% you are. You're crazy if you don't.
Is that not, I mean, or does that make you salivate when you hear those numbers that Kelce's put up in the postseason?
Salivate's a good word.
That's all he's done. I mean, in 9 games, 52 catches for 632 yards and 6 touchdowns. So I'll rest my case there. And then just when anyone, for the Ravens or Lamar Jackson, whatever, and he's a phenomenal talent. He's so much fun to watch. But just look at what he's done in the postseason and what Mahomes has done in the postseason. And good night. There's nothing else. Well, we're talking about Ray. Nah, you want to talk about who the best players are. You're damn right postseason matters. I know some of the best players don't even get that chance. Well, sorry. I think it's a huge factor when you talk about these lists. And, again, I just get tickled looking at Travis Kelce's postseason production there.
So
very tickled.
I thought I saw somebody, I'm going to have to look up the rules again, but I thought I saw somebody say that the players actually turned these votes in before the postseason.
I think Chidia said that yesterday.
Jeff Chidia said that yesterday twice on the show, so.
That's where I heard it. I don't
usually
listen.
Well, at least you heard it. At least you heard it. Now you know where you're.
Jeff Chidia also, by the way, carried on that argument about Tony Gonzalez and Travis Kelce in the hallway.
I avoided it with
myself and Curtis Siebold for quite some time after.
Bringing up postseason performance at all?
No, didn't. That didn't come up.
There you go. There it is.
We voted.
Right.
He voted
exactly
on it before
right.
The postseason.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. Before we move on from football or the Chiefs. Jake, Nate, do you have any other comments about Damian Williams opting out?
I fully support his decision. I support anybody that makes that decision. And I, from a football standpoint, I think that Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be just fine. I think there'll probably be a couple bumps in the road, maybe, you know, pass protection type things like that. But I think typically running backs, we've seen rookie running backs step right in and produce right away in the NFL, especially ones that are drafted highly. So I think that from a football standpoint, the Chiefs in both situations with LDT and with Damian Williams, I think they're going to be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to respect the decision in this time. I mean, you don't have to. I do. Because I'm not in his shoes. I don't know what that's like. So I think that for him, yeah, make the decision that's best for you and your family. I'm going to respect it. Now, in terms of football, I think Chiefs are well, more than well equipped to handle this loss. It sucks for sure. But yeah, I mean, that first round draft pick looks like a golden ticket right now. I mean, that's it couldn't have worked out any better for the Kansas City Chiefs right now. With both of the guys that have opted out, the Chiefs have had replacements right away, right? They signed Assembly right after LDT opted out, and they had Edwards-Helaire waiting in the wings now that Damian Williams has opted out. So they are very fortunate, but also they have put themselves in this position with this roster. And so that's Brett Veach. A lot of credit goes to him. And yeah. I would be shocked if this is the last person on the Chiefs roster that opts out.
They got the quote-unquote deadline is Monday. I guess that's the deadline to make sure you get the $150,000 stipend. And by the way, that's an advance. It's not a you just get $150,000. It's just like a salary advance on what your
future earnings.
Yeah, supposed to make in the future. Nate Solder opted out. I think we're up to 30 players across the league right now. 2 of them on the Chiefs, 6 of them on the Patriots. And I'm guessing that we're going to see a lot more between now and Monday. It's got to be an incredibly difficult decision. I mean, everybody in the world's making tough decisions right now, and these guys are no different. These have to be, hey, if you play in the NFL, the odds are that you really love playing football. There might be a few guys that don't really love it that just happen to be really talented, but I think that's the kind of sport to go through what it takes on a day-in, day-out basis to play that sport, what you put your body through, what your body has to recover from on a day-in, day-out basis. You love the sport, and you only have a limited window to play that sport at a professional level. We know the careers of NFL players outside of the quarterback and kicker positions are not very long, and so you only get so much time to do it. So it's got to be a really difficult decision for all these guys, I would think.
So let's take this opportunity, since we were talking about postseason performance, to celebrate Damian Williams and what he did over the past couple of years in the 2018 postseason, in the two games that he played, and just remember the marvelous game that he had against the Indianapolis Colts in helping the Chiefs achieve their first victory, playoff victory at Arrowhead Stadium in forever. But in those two games against the Colts and the Patriots, he had 35 carries for 159 yards and two touchdowns, and then 10 catches for 91 yards and two more touchdowns. So he had four total touchdowns in that postseason. And then in 2019, last year for the postseason, he had 46 carries for 196 yards and four touchdowns, and then 11 catches and 94 yards for another two touchdowns. So the man scored 10 touchdowns in the last two postseasons.
That's nuts.
Freaking believable. And the game he had against the Indianapolis Colts, he was magnificent in that game. Absolutely magnificent in that game. And remember, and look, he had 25 carries for 129 yards and a touchdown, and also had five catches for 25 yards in that game against the Indianapolis Colts. He was just terrific, and that was such a big game and such a big win to get this team over the hump, and he was a big part of it. And then, of course, you have to mention the Super Bowl again with such a great performance and a play that Jake will replay right now, a play that forever, anytime you hear it, anytime you see it, you're going to have goosebumps, you're going to have special warm feelings deep inside you. You will feel it all the way down in your loins. You'll feel it in your plums, as Will Ferrell has said. So let's all feel it in our plums right now together.
Under center Mahomes, second down, six from the 38. Hand off to Williams, got a block from the fullback. He's at the 35, the 30, breaks a tackle on the sideline, 20, chasing him down the sideline, the 10, the 5, touchdown! That's it! That's it! A 38-yard touchdown run by Damian Williams.
When will you ever get tired of hearing that? I say never.
I think probably the day after never.
and just look, it could have been anyone, and I'd have loved it, but the fact that it was Kevin Harlan makes it like times 10, times a million, how much I love it. And yes, in that game, the when the Chiefs finally get to the effing Super Bowl, Damian Williams, 17 carries for 104 yards and a touchdown, four catches for 29 yards and a touchdown. Thank you, Damian Williams.
And it seems to be game over, Chiefs.
Thank you, Kurt Warner.
It seems to be, and it was. And look, the Chiefs are very lucky that they drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and they're going to be just fine. And they're going to still be dynamic. And Brett Veach looks like he was a fortune teller with that draft pick. I wish that Damian Williams is going to be on the team, but he made that decision, and I'm happy for him that he made the decision that's going to make him and his family happy. But the Chiefs will be just fine with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Thank you.
Well, and Damian Williams is still only 28 years old. So whatever this season's going to look like, whatever the season is, That's a year of a running back not putting extra hits on his body, not taking tread off those tires, as the metaphor goes, And so certainly you hope when 2021 rolls around, you're looking at a refreshed 29-year-old Damian Williams who's still got some gas in the tank. I'm using all kinds of car-related metaphors for him. But, you know, so that's another thing to remember as well. He's still young enough that this shouldn't be the end of it, you know, in terms of his career.
One more note before we take a break. Did you hear Lamar Jackson talking about Antonio Brown, working out with Antonio Brown?
I did not.
Do either of you think Antonio Brown will ever play again in the NFL?
Well, he's retired like three times, hasn't he, before ever coming back?
Do you think we will see him in another game?
If I had to be Vegas Jake and bet on it, I would say no, but I wouldn't rule it out. I wouldn't sit here and say, he's never going to do it. I mean, I don't know. I think you can't rule anything out in today's world.
Does it make your butt sore to sit on the fence like that for so long?
No, I like sitting on things.
Yeah, that's what I've heard about you.
They're spinning around on the post.
Yeah.
I would be straddling
that fence, baby.
Will he play again or not?
I don't think he will.
Will he play again or not?
I don't think there's any GM that wants to take that risk on him. There's too much. He's just too much. He's a wild card, and in this day and time, GMs/coaches don't want to deal with that in this current state. Not because he's a variable right now when you don't want variables. I think in a normal world, in a normal situation, yeah, you're willing to take a risk on that guy in your locker room. But in our current
normal world, he was a handful too.
Right, that's what I'm saying. And so in the pandemic world, you want to be worrying about that guy in your locker room? I don't think there's many organizations that do.
Let me hear Lamar Jackson talking about working out with Antonio Brown.
I just feel, you know, he's a great, like, well, around us he was a great guy. You know, you don't really see anything going on at all. You know, he cool down to earth guy. You know, and he's passionate about the sport of football. Like, when he was working, you can tell, like, this man is, he gonna go, like, 24-7. And after the workout, he still went and lifted. Like, he already, prior to the workout, he lifted. We go out there and go to throwing routes. After that, them guys went and lifted some more. I'm like, dang, this guy is no quitting with him. So it's like, that's the type of guy we need in our locker room. And I feel like that we want to win. And I can tell in him, he want to win. He want to play ball.
Did you think you would hear anyone this year, this season, say that Antonio Brown was the type of guy that they need in their locker room?
I like how he's like, you know, he's a great guy. He's a great guy around us.
Well, around us, he was a great guy.
Play that at the end there, though. Did you think anyone was going to say that?
Not necessarily, but I would differ with Jake a little bit. I think that there are GMs and coaches out there that still believe they might have the right chemistry for a guy like that. Because
why isn't he not on a roster right now then?
Well, I mean, sometimes it takes a while, you know. You might be right.
Are you disagreeing with Lamar Jackson? Do you not think that that's the kind of guy you need in your locker room?
That's the type of guy we need in our locker room, and I feel like this.
Yeah, take him. Yes, please. Please, Ravens, take him.
Yeah, so you want them to put him in that locker room.
Go ahead.
So if they signed him, no, honestly, if they signed him, would you be like, oh, no, they signed Antonio Brown, or would you be like, oh, they signed Antonio Brown?
I'd grab my popcorn. That's what I'm doing.
What?
I'm just sitting down with my tub of popcorn, and I'm watching this explosion happen.
Make sure you follow my IG.
Well, I mean, look, if you are going to bring in a guy like Antonio Brown, you want to, like, the Patriots did it, but they had Tom Brady. You want to bring him in with a guy like Lamar Jackson, who's a young, budding star in this league? You want that guy around?
Best player in the league, apparently.
You want that guy around your star quarterback? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I want him around Lamar Jackson, yeah. Not for the good reasons.
I don't know. That Lamar Jackson's comment caught the ear there at the end. That was not what I was anticipating.
That's the type of guy we need in our locker room, and I feel like.
You know, I wasn't quite ready for that endorsement. I like it. I mean,
I just like the fact that
I like Lamar Jackson. You know, but screw it. Lamar Jackson just saying what he feels, and for him after working out with him, probably give me another weapon. If you're a quarterback.
I love the fact that he's a great guy. Well, around us, he's a great guy.
Because
we all have friends like this where somebody will ask you, like,
well, around us, he was a great guy, you know.
Hey, what's so-and-so like? You go, well, I get along with him good.
He's a good buddy of mine.
I like him.
Yeah.
But you know that he's got issues with 10 other people. But he's your friend, so you're like, oh, I get along with him.
Yeah, he's my guy. He's a good guy.
Yeah, what's Nate Buchanan really like? I mean, I don't have a problem with him.
Right, yeah. He's never done anything wrong to me.
But you know.
Right?
No, I mean, that's like.
I was thinking that we all had a friend like that, and then I realized I'm that friend. Oh, dang it.
No, it's like people would ask me, like, you know, after.
Why is Steven always mad? Is he always mad as he looks, or?
Like when I was an intern for you and Jason, Steven, it'd be like, hey, what's Whitlock really like? It's like, you know, he's always been a good guy to me. I mean, that's he's always treated me good.
He did ungift Dave Borchardt a treadmill, but he's be cool to me.
I've seen him be a complete a-hole to other people, but, you know, never to me.
We've all been there, Lamar. We get it.
You know, he's a great, like, well, around us, he was a great guy, you know.
Yeah, breaks.
The first half of my career, like, let's see, one, two, like, the first three coasts I ever had were widely regarded by other people as maybe the biggest a-holes in the industry at that given time. I'd always had, you know. What is it like to do a show with him? Is he that big of an
it's pretty good to me.
It's all right with me. I mean, I don't have a problem with it.
Right.
You know? It went from one a-hole to then the biggest a-hole I ever did a show with. It was like, hey, I got really good at having to answer those questions like Jake was just talking about.
And now you go to... co-hosting the show with the littlest a-hole.
You know, the funny thing is, though, is like it's actually really easy for me these days because it happens a lot. You meet somebody, will go, hey, what's Pounders really like? Or what's Steven really like? And the best part is I'm like, oh exactly what you hear on the radio. I mean, I don't think there's a whole lot of false...
What do you think he's like?
Yeah, like, yep. I don't think there's a whole lot of false pretenses on this show. We pretty much, you know...
Yeah, there's a whole lot holding back.
I'm like, yeah, the guy that you hear on the radio, that's pretty much him. Yeah. It's not like Jake goes in there and gets into character for the show. You know, that's...
As long as they don't ask, like, Susan, hey, what's he really like?
Oh, you have some time, I'll tell you.
He is awful. He never shuts up.
She wouldn't be like, you know what, around us, he's a good guy.
Hey, no. Oh, no. I wish he acted like he did on the radio. Where's Mr. Radio Guy now? Where's Mr. Happy? Like,
God, if you ask Kelly, he's
big. You got any jokes for us, smartass? Like, not right now.
If you ask Kelly, she'd be like, you mean the idiot that can't ever remember anything? That has to call me at least once a month to bring something to the radio station in the morning because he left it at home? That guy?
You know what? I'm happy with the ratings right now on 810. I get very poor ratings at home. my audience here. I have not listened to hardly at all, even when I'm talking. Let me tell you. People say, hey, are you worried about listeners and all that? I go, I'm just worried about my family. If I can get them to listen to me, then I feel like I've really accomplished it.
Yeah, there's a lot of tuning out going on.
And I don't, trust me, I don't blame them. So there, that was a fun-filled football segment for you. When we come back, we will play some Royals post-game. Yeah, they lost last night. Yes, it angered me. Yes, I did. I was stunned when that ball went out off Duffy, that home run. I just kept carrying and carrying, and I just almost had it. Whit Merrifield. Oh, Whit, you could have saved me. You could have saved the Royals, but, you know. I was going to say, I bet Whit was really pissed off about that, but he's been mad since he was called up. And so I don't know if he can get any angrier, you know? If he was already mad. He would have been mad if he would have caught it.
So hey, if you stay mad, you don't have to get
that's
mad.
That's why I like him. That's exactly right. Stay angry when it works for you at the plate. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Royals lose last night, unfortunately, again to the Detroit Tigers. 5-4. Royals are up 4-1 after three. Then Danny Duffy gives up three in the fifth as they tie it. And then the Tigers scored a run off Ian Kennedy in the seventh inning. And I would not like to see Jacoby Jones at the plate anymore, any longer. He was 3-for-3 last night. Very tired of Jacoby Jones, who really does nothing against anyone else, apparently, except for the Royals. But let's hear manager Mike Matheny after the Royals 5-4 loss to Detroit last night.
Hey, Mike, you start off with Danny Duffy, and just it seemed like early on, he had a lot working. I mean, that fastball, the changeup seemed like he was moving the fastball around. What did you see from him early, and what do you think got him off track there?
Yeah, I mean, he had great stuff today, Lynn. I mean, you watch him getting punch outs with the heater, elevating when he wanted to, getting swing and misses on both breaking pitches, getting strikeout on the changeup. It just looked like it was going to be one of those days where everything was clicking for him. And I think it really was, you know, unfortunately, you know, that leadoff walk, which once again, those have scored at a very high percentage against us this year. And that just kind of opened up the door for things to go bad. And, you know, really surprised the one in right actually got out. Thought we were going to walk out there with a 2-run lead. And, but I thought Danny did a really good job. Stuff looked right tonight. Unfortunately, the one inning got away, and that one inning has been biting us lately.
That home run, did you think that it was – I mean, it sounds like you didn't think it was hit all that well, like off the bat initially?
No, I mean, I remember this park playing bigger. But it is, you know, the heat of the summer. And ball's carrying. We benefited from it, too. We've had our share of home runs. But I was just surprised off the bat that it went as far as it did.
And that that pitch from Kennedy, did it just catch too much in the middle of the plate? I mean, I didn't think from the replay it looked like it was maybe knee high, but I couldn't tell if it was.
It didn't seem like a bad pitch. I haven't watched it again on video. Once again, I think he was kind of expecting the exact same thing. We were looking at a fly ball there. You know, you got Jones had a big day. And a couple big doubles that hurt us, and then that one was the one that put us away. But, you know, our guys came out swinging the bat really well. I thought it was going to be a big day for our offense again. Unfortunately, couldn't get much more.
The first five innings, you guys were able to frustrate Boyd. And what happened after that? It seems like you couldn't do anything after that.
Yeah, sometimes guys make adjustments. So they did a nice job on their end. And you know, we had a good game plan going in, had some pressure to be able to put on them early. And once again, just couldn't add on a whole lot late.
When it happened, was it pretty good to see Mondy come out early and be aggressive? And I mean, not only just drive the ball, but to go for three on that?
Yeah. There are only very, very few players in the league that can get to third base on that ball. And to see him turn on the extra gear in between second and third and give us an opportunity for Bubba to come through. But you just need some of that positive reinforcement, knowing that he's working on the right things to see something go right. Then Bubba to come through in that big situation. Nicky Lopez putting together better at-bats today as well, grinding, fighting through, fighting off two strike pitches, hitting the ball hard, lining out the other way. I mean, we saw some positive things, but unfortunately, offensively, we just didn't get enough today.
And was it important for you to get to see Zuber come back the way he did after the last outing?
Yeah, you know, that's a big situation again. It's not just one of those courtesies, go out there and feel better about yourself. We're right in the middle of their order, and we need somebody to come through and make big pitches. And I knew he was excited to get a chance to get out there, but he was the guy we wanted, and he made the pitches. You could tell he had a laser-like focus on exactly what he wanted to do, and he executed every pitch. It was all working.
Everybody good?
What would you like to see? One more. What would you like to see the offense do better, especially in the late innings?
Yeah, we just got to keep the pressure on. You got to realize that they're bringing their best arms in those late innings also. That's what we're doing. We've been able to shut guys down late. We've got one ball get out of the park here, but Ian came in getting strikeouts. They've got some guys, and every team we're going to face is going to have the same thing. They're not going to give a lot of room once you get to the late innings. And so we got to grind through the at-bats, which I thought you can watch Cordero there at the end, just working, hitting the ball hard. Unfortunately, can't find the holes. So you need a good approach. You need a little luck. Things go your way and find some holes.
That was Mike Matheny after the game. We're going to hear Danny Duffy now. And man, what a frustrating performance from Danny Duffy. He looked so good. And then you look at the box score, 5 innings, 8 strikeouts, only 1 walk, only 3 hits, but gave up the 4 runs. And again, man, that home run was just killer. That Whit Merrifield almost, it would have been a great catch, but almost was able to come up with. And off the bat, it sure didn't seem like that was going to be a home run. Just kept carrying and carrying. It's happened a couple of times in the series, and I didn't think off the bat it was going to be a home run. And it seems like even the broadcasters were surprised. But also, and Nate, you can understand this, they're broadcasting from Kauffman Stadium and watching it on the monitors and TVs just like everyone else, so it's probably a little bit more difficult for them to judge it, and that's why they seemed as surprised as I was. If they were there, they'd probably be able to read it off the bat a little bit better, but they're not, and so they're watching on the TV as well.
Yeah.
And so it's just, you know.
But sometimes balls just carry, too. Like, there are times, you know, there are times when you're at the ballpark, even where you, I mean, you know, Matheny was there, and he was surprised. Sometimes, you know, and sometimes you can be fooled by the nature of a guy's swing, because sometimes a guy just takes a murderous hack, and the ball jumps off the bat at first, and you think, oh, that thing's gone, and then it's like a routine fly ball to center field because of the launch angle, whatever it is. And then there's other times a guy gets out on his front foot, takes kind of a half-hearted swing, and next thing you know, it somehow carries out of the ballpark. That can mess with you too, but it is harder when you're watching it on TV because you don't get to see that depth. You don't really see what trajectory the ball's coming off the bat when you're just watching it on a monitor. And it was weird. I saw Joel Goldberg, I know you saw it too, tweeting, you probably talked about it, tweeting about calling a game from Kauffman Stadium in the pouring rain.
That's crazy.
Because the game was somewhere else.
Why didn't they should have looked at the reaction of the crowd to see if that
right.
was going to be a home run.
Yeah, the crowd always thinks it's a home run.
Right. Let's hear from Danny Duffy after last night's loss.
It seemed like early on everything was working pretty well for you. I mean, it seemed like you were able to elevate. You were changing speeds. How did it feel early? Did you feel like there was a significant change, or was it just maybe an at-bat or two?
Yeah, I mean, from the jump through the end, I felt like I had the best of that in a long time. Really, on nights like that, you got your curveball, your changeup working. My slider was really good today. I don't feel like I threw it a lot, but it's unfortunate that I didn't give, you know, 7 or 8. Made a couple of mistakes. But overall, man, to answer your question, I felt really good.
That home run, did you feel like you had the spot that you wanted? And off the bat, did you think that was going to get out, or did you think it was maybe a fly ball?
And off the bat, I didn't think it was going to get out. I don't feel like I hit the spot that I wanted. I needed to go further down with that. If it's further down, it's probably probably a different result. I felt confident with what I was doing out there. It just didn't go our way, and it's unacceptable to have that kind of stuff tonight. That kind of stuff that I had, got to go deeper into the game, man. It's brutal. Got to go deeper. Got to go deeper into the game.
And you seem just as frustrated with that leadoff walk as you did with the bomb, yeah.
100%. Feel like, you know, you never take at-bats for granted, but I was just seeing so many swings and misses and maybe a little bit overconfident in the heater. And, you know, that walk, I paid for that walk big time, man. And, you know, at this stage of my career, you know, I got a pretty good grasp on what I'm doing and what I need to do. That can't happen, man. That can't happen.
Danny, you mentioned the curveball, and I know you threw it a lot last year, but it seems like you've thrown it a little bit more this year. How good does that pitch feel in comparison to last year and even years past?
I mean, that curveball was kind of hit or miss for the last couple of years. You know, and then before that, I completely eliminated it. That was the pitch that I really felt like I blew out on in 2012. And I strayed away from it, and we worked so hard on it to get it to where it's at now. I got to figure out a way to bounce that. I got to figure out a way to not loop it in there. Again, it's all about execution, and that falls upon me. Our bullpen shouldn't have been in that situation tonight. You know, with the stuff that I had, I should have gone way further into the game. And if I could find a way to shorten my stride a little bit and bounce the curveball and not have it be so loopy, especially the, you know, the guy who's hitting the best on their team. I mean, Jacoby Jones is locked in. The guy's on. And, you know, he made us pay tonight. Got myself into a couple jams I had no business being in because I was hanging curveballs and not locating my fastball to, you know, one of the most, two of the most important at-bats that were in that game.
That was frustrated Danny Duffy after the game. And that's right, the home run. We talk about the home run, that leadoff walk will kill you.
Yeah, and I love listening to Danny Duffy post-game because he's always he takes ownership of everything that happens on the field, and he doesn't make really any excuses for himself. He's usually almost overly hard on himself after a game, and I always find that refreshing. So I like listening to Danny talk. One of the disturbing trends for me so far this season, guys, the Kansas City Royals as a team are tied for last. I'm not counting the Marlins because the Marlins have played half as many games as everybody else. But for the teams that have played 5 to 6 games this year, the Royals are tied for last with 11 walks. They have the fewest walks per game in all of baseball. And then on the flip side, they are striking out. They are have the fourth most strikeouts in baseball. And so in the last two games, 15 strikeouts for the Royals, 0 walks against what is not considered to be a real good pitching staff of the Tigers. You can almost understand it going up against the Indians in the first series of the season. But in these last two games that they've lost, very close games, right? Your offense gets 0 walks and 15 strikeouts. And we just heard Danny Duffy talking about how important that leadoff walk was. He felt like that might have been the biggest mistake of that inning, more so even than the home run, right? So, and I don't know if that's going to change for the Royals. They don't have necessarily a lot of guys that are big free pass type guys, but you're not going to probably win a lot of games when you're going, you know, two games in a row with a combined strikeout to walk ratio of 15 strikeouts and 0 walks offensively. And unfortunately, that's kind of where they're trending right now through 6 games into the season.
Let's get the rainy forecast from Jeff Penner, and we'll take a break and we'll find out why my dogs are barking like all hell's breaking loose outside this door. I'll let you know after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Thursday, July 30th, 2020. Gary Lezak is vacationing in Lake Tahoe, and so we're going to do something a little different. We're actually going to get you a forecast right now from Jeff Penner, who joins us now. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Good morning, Stephen. Yes, Gary's off for a couple of days, and so you get the forecast. And,
it's a very different approach. What you like to do, and I like the fact that you think outside the box, what you like to do is you like to actually talk about the weather when you come on the show.
Well, yeah, I look at myself in the mirror and I go, oh, a meteorologist. I better give the forecast. So, yeah, that's how I go about things.
Yes, you do. You see, right before you come on the show with us, you give yourself that self-affirmation in the mirror.
I'm a meteorologist. I know about the weather.
I'm smart enough.
I'm going to talk about the weather.
Right. Doggone it, people like me.
Yes, exactly. And the weather is extremely rare for this time of year. The last week of July, the first week of August, on average, are supposed to be the hottest weeks in Kansas City, and it's anything but. Yesterday, we had two tornado warnings, in one in Clay County, one in Platt County, one near Excelsior Springs, one near Smithville. No tornado confirmed. There was rotation, maybe a little funnel, but to even have that threat, you know, on a late July afternoon, extremely rare, and then followed a few hours later by a flash flood in Westport, where there was 1 to 2 inches of rain in an hour, and that caused some flooding. So it was really dry in June, and we needed rain. Now we do not need any more rain. KCI, the official station, official reporting station for Kansas City, is over 9.5 inches of rain for the month. That puts us as the 9th wettest July on record, and the 2nd wettest July on record is 10.90 inches, set back in the flood of 93. And today there's another chance of rain. They get another inch and a half of rain today, which is possible in a few spots. We'll jump from number 9 to number 2. We won't get to number 1. That's over 15 inches of rain. I hope we don't get to number 1. That's an awful lot of rain today. And we
it's
won't,
a moist one.
It's a moist one, all right. And
Jeff, my phone was breaking up a little bit. I didn't hear. Did you say someone was flashed in Westport last night? Because that happened to me, I believe it was 1995, and that was it was actually an enjoyable experience. So I didn't know. How did that happen? What did you say? I don't.
That might have happened. It was raining last night, so anything's possible. Yeah, right. There was definitely a flash flood last night. Yeah.
Oh, and, sorry.
Yeah, sorry about that. Today, and also the average high is near 90, and today we will be in the 70s. It's very humid, but it's only in the 70s, and we have a few showers out there now. The rain will increase in coverage throughout the afternoon and evening, and there will be some heavy downpours. There could be some flash flooding. There is no doubt about that this afternoon in some spots. Not all will get that. And then tonight, periods of rain and in the 60s. And then tomorrow, the rain will end in the morning and some sun in the afternoon. Only about 80 degrees. The last day of July, only about 80. Now, you can get a day or two where it is in the 70s to near 80 this time of year. That is not that unusual. What makes it unusual is that over the weekend and into next week, still highs in the 70s and low 80s. There is no sign of any real hot weather for at least a week or so, and there may be a little few more showers on Sunday and into Monday, but no big storm systems. So some great weather actually after this rain after the system moves out tonight. Some great weather into the weekend, not hot at all, which is that's what makes it unusual and rare, is that it's just several days in a row like this. So looking pretty good in the Royals. The Royals, they come back tomorrow night and play at 7, is that correct?
Back in Kansas City for the home opener.
The home opener. No one will be out there as far as fans are concerned, but the weather will be great. Look at the game. And it should be pretty good with temperatures tomorrow night. I'd be like in the 70s falling in probably into the 60s. It's going to be incredible considering it's July 31st. So, looking good there. A few showers now will increase this afternoon. Watch out for the heavy downpours and the flash flooding. Actually, and I've said this before, flash flooding actually causes more deaths per year than tornadoes and lightning combined. So when there's a tornado warning, we go all get all over it, and there's every reason for that to occur, and they can be very problematic, no doubt about it. Flash flooding actually is a problem. There was the video we showed last night. There was a car floating in the water in Westport, and sometimes you can't avoid it. Sometimes it happens quickly, and yesterday it happened in less than an hour, so it was very, very quick. So watch for that in a few spots today. Not all will see that. And then some great weather heading into the weekend with just maybe a few showers on Sunday. Here it is. Bob Hamilton Plumbing.
Hit a home run with a brand new energy efficient AC as low as $63 a month from Bob Hamilton Plumbing. Better call Bob.
Up next, we'll be joined by someone who flashed people in Westport back in the 90s. Tim Grunhard will be with us on Sports Radio 810 WHB.